Hi, I'm Andy Puddicombe, the host of a brand new podcast called Radio Headspace. I'd love it if you could join me to start the day in a different way. Whether you like to think of it as a thought for the day, a moment of pause, or some time to reflect, and a reminder that no matter what's going on in our lives, there's comfort to be found in coming together for just a few minutes every weekday morning. You can listen and subscribe to Radio Headspace for free on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen.
670 The Score is the official radio home of Cubs baseball. Listen to all 60 games of the 2020 season here.
It's got a chance! Cubs win!
Live from the Hyundai Studios, this is 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station.
This hour is being brought to you by Basement Water Stoppers. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
I think there are people who, and Kyle Brandt's one of them, and it's really disappointing, that want to throw the smoke bomb out there of people who work in sports are rooting against sports to return. For someone who's Ivy League educated, I find that to be the most simplistic, silly idea that I've heard when it comes to this. Even if you want to play the game of follow the money, if I'm selfish, sports being back helps me make more money. Like, if we take nothing else into account, sports being back helps me to make more money. I can work in the environment where sports are limited, and I think over the last 3.5 months, sports media overall has done a really good job of it. But there are still going to be less eyes, less ears, less people clicking on what it is we do if there aren't sports to talk about.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
And as I said yesterday, my livelihood isn't more valuable than those guys who are playing their lives. Welcome into the show. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. There's Bears news that we need to talk about. There's some White Sox stuff that we need to get into. But we start with our weekly chats with the manager of your Chicago Cubs and the author of Teammate, My Journey in Baseball and a World Series for the Ages. I am almost done with David Ross's book, and I have enjoyed reading it the last 2 days. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you can go to alpamonteford.com. Rossi, how are you?
Good morning, Lawrence. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. I know that you guys are getting ready for a game tonight. It was a bit of a nail-biter last night between you and the Reds. I'd love to know. I know that you have seen a ton of those games from behind the plate. What was it like to manage one of those games?
Yeah, it's definitely a different seat when you don't have a lot of control over what's going on out there other than just, you know, the moves you make. It's a little nerve-wracking, you know. Probably didn't see that playing out the way it kind of unfolded at the end. You know, you think you got 8 runs and it turned out to be enough, but, you know, it's still so early in the season that you're trying to get guys that the important innings, you're trying to get guys from sitting around for so many days off. Some of our pitchers hadn't pitched for 5 or 6 days coming out of the bullpen. That's really tough. These guys are used to throwing on back-to-back days or you know, every other day at least. And for them to have that much time off and be a little rusty, it happens. Trying to get these guys in there with 11 arms down there is a new kind of challenge that I'm faced with, and we're figuring it out as we go.
Kimbrel seemed to have good velo last night, but struggled with command, especially with the curveball. What was going on?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, the fastball looked electric. It looked really good. Probably the best I've seen his fastball this entire year. I mean, he's been really in camps and stuff. It's just continued to uptick and continue to grow. And then, you know, just couldn't get that feel for the breaking ball, whether that's rust or just something he's working on. You know, we got to continue to work through that. But his first appearance of the year, I know a lot gets pressure gets put on him because he's in the back end and coming off, you know, not his best season last year. But, you know, the reality is all of our guys, their first time out, with the exception of a couple, have not pitched the way they're expected to pitch or the way they want to pitch. And I put him in that category too. We had a quick ramp up, a 3-week ramp up to the season, and we're 4 games in, and you know, trying not to judge everybody. I know that the shortened season putting everything heightened, but we're still at a very unique situation that we're dealing with, and I've got to be patient on that end, on my end, I should say.
Well, it looks like you read my notepad, because that was the next thing I was going to ask you about. Like, with the 60-game season, the you have to get wins. Like, it's so vital that there isn't a lot of time for there to be hiccups. So how do you go about showing confidence in Craig and also understanding that you can't let some of those games get away?
Well, you got to look at the totality of the team and who do you trust and who's going to pitch big innings for you. And those, you know, to a man, those guys have to they got to show me who to trust. They have to go out there and get big outs and be those guys that you know, you continue to build the confidence in for me. You know, some of these guys have a track record that you come in with a little more confidence, and then we have some young guys down there that have to establish themselves as major leaguers. So what I would tell you about this short season is, yeah, I understand it's unique in 60 games, but the process of the player and the process, we can't change all of a sudden and just expect players to just, oh, it's a 60-game season and I've got to turn it on and I'm supposed to be sharp from day one. It's the same game that we've played through 162, and when you have a shortened season, there's still going to be bumps in the road that you really wouldn't panic about, so to speak, and at 162, just because it's 60 games, those same struggles and moments to get better and grow, those are still there. Those are still opportunities. We just don't have as much time. So it just creates patience on my end and continue to take it day to day and try to grow and get better. I think we'll be at our best on the back end of this season as long as we continue to work hard and learn from our mistakes.
The great thing about having you on the show, other than, you know, your personality and you being the manager of the Cubs, is that you caught for forever in a lot of different places. So walk me through what's happening. Like, let's say that you're dealing with Kimbrel struggling to find command of his off-speed stuff. Behind the plate, and if you were to make a move to the mound to talk to him, what types of conversations go on when a guy is struggling and he knows he's struggling and you're trying to get through the inning or try to lock a game down?
Yeah, I try to look at ball flight. I watch a lot the catcher where they set up with Wilson, have conversations with Wilson or Vic or whoever may be catching that day. You try to think about slight adjustments. You know, I talk a lot of the times about, you know, rushing towards the plate when the ball's up and the arm not getting a chance to catch up. Just the little keys that I knew. I'm no pitching coach, but the little keys I knew from catching, I try to bring those into play and use my experiences in that area. And, you know, luckily so far, I think these guys come to me with some of that as well and want my opinion in that area because of my background and the things I've seen and the guys I've been able to catch and moments I've had in my career. So, yeah, it's definitely a tool I try to utilize, but we also have great pitching coaches and a pitching staff that are in tune with all that as well. So I try to do my thing as a manager and stay out of that area unless I'm really needed. But it was constant communication on my end with my coaches.
Cubs manager David Ross joining me here on The Score. Obviously, you weren't planning on Jeffress to pitch last night. But the fact that he came in and closed the door, what does that mean to you that he was able to get it going and get you out of that thing?
It means that JJ is somebody that I have, has got a ton of experience. And if you're around this guy for 2 seconds, you realize what a professional he is, how he goes about his business, his work. He's not scared of the moment. He wants the ball. I mean, all those things showed last night. in such a getting him up really last minute and bringing him in and really a tough situation as you're going to come into, and him succeeding and watching him manage that and go through that just reiterates all that I've thought about JJ since he's been here, and I'm happy he's on our team.
Rossi, what are the conversations between you and Lester like now, and are they the same as when you were his catcher?
Yeah, well, you know, Riz kept telling me he was laughing about our mound visit last night, the real one, the first time really I had to go out and talk to John in the game. And I shoot him straight. It's the same as I do with Kyle and guys that I've known. I go out there to the mound, and if I have maybe a little information nugget that I can give, I give it. But sometimes the main thing is I know him probably as good as anybody, and I see things that maybe other people don't see, and so just start talking those out with him. You know, are you tired, or how you feeling? It's a hot day. You know, just little details. How's the cutter? You know, what are you feeling? And get feedback, because I know him. We've had experiences. We've been through some serious battles together. And so anytime that I can just ask him, and I'll tell you the one thing he doesn't do. He walked out last night, and I said, how you feeling, buddy? Fine, just fine. You know, fine. I was like, all right. So you're not going to tell me the truth. I'll continue to use my eyes and see. So we got a good laugh about that afterwards. And John's, it's fun to manage him, and we have a great relationship, and it's a good feedback as soon as he's not competing.
How difficult is it to take the ball away from a pitcher who hasn't given up a hit?
Yesterday that was easy. that wasn't hard at all. That was not difficult. There's in the fifth, and I know where John's at. I can read him really well. Last night was easy. Now, if there's a guy, letting Kyle's situation on opening day and he hadn't given up a hit, and we're at the pitch count, then it gets a little more scary. But I'm not worried about a guy that had to give up a hit in the fifth, and no chance of him getting to that situation towards the back end of the game. That's not a tough decision at all.
I've enjoyed watching John in his last two starts, because I feel like he's throwing the spots where he can't get hurt. And if he does get hurt, then you got to tip your cap to the hitter. He's been keeping the ball low. It looks like he seems to have pretty good command. When he struggles, it seems like he struggles up. So how do you keep him from elevating his fastball so that it does get hit?
Well, I mean, I think, I would say, I value your opinion, but it's also like pitching up for some guys on some reports or some hitters is what he needs to do. So okay. I respect your unprofessional eye, but some of that is by design. And John is really good. You're right in some respects, where John is really good when he has a nice angle to his fastball and he gets down in the zone. Wilson probably had one of his better games receiving rating-wise that we can score now in receiving that low pitch last night. Did a really good job. So that's two guys working in tandem together. And when he's got that down in the zone, it really lends to hitters chasing the breaking ball underneath, and then when you do pop one up at the eyes above the barrel, some of these low ball hitters, it looks like the velocity is a little bit more as well.
Well, good. I mean, it's something that I was looking at, and I was like, man, he's doing a great job keeping the ball down. But I obviously
I respect it. It was good. You're right on. I want to make sure you're not going to be my pitching coach this show.
No. I'm all about getting checked if I'm wrong. I'm all about it. But I love talking about this type of stuff and learning like what goes on and trying to teach the Cub fan and myself about all of this stuff as it's happening in game, so that we can all understand what it is that we're seeing better. Like, I look at this as an educational opportunity for myself and for the listener. So don't ever worry about holding back on me if you feel like I'm off base on something.
No. I won't. You've got a good point. John was down last night, and you saw that. I think a lot of that too was, like I said, with when he's creating that angle, the cutter is really what works off that angle, and when it's down like that, he can run it in at the hands. I'm just messing with you.
It's all good, man. Look, I'm making my way through the book right now, and I mean, I feel like we have some things that we could totally bond over after reading the book, and I feel like there's some things that's going to be, you know, some friction between us.
Let's talk the friction. I like that. Everybody says they like the book. What do you got? Where are you going to push back on me?
Well, no, the friction is it's more like it's personal. For example, like, you're an Auburn guy and a Florida guy, and I went to grad school at Alabama. So there's that sort of thing. Like, I was a catcher in high school and college. You were in high school, college, and the pros. So I feel like we can vibe on that. I also enjoyed you talking about how much you love basketball. Like, that was the thing that jumped out of, like, the first 30 pages of the book, where you had made the commitment to your coach that you were going to keep playing basketball, and your coach is like, David, you're a good player, but you're a great baseball player, so go play baseball. Like, I enjoyed reading all of that stuff to kind of learn how you think.
Yeah, you're right, Lawrence. I appreciate that. You know what's funny is I'll touch on, like, the Auburn-Florida thing. My best friend's a pitching coach at Alabama now, and so we go back and forth a lot. He tries to send me Alabama gear to the house, and I just ain't having it. And I'll send it your way.
Please do.
And then I live in Tallahassee, so I've got season tickets to FSU. I grew up an FSU fan, so some of the guys at ESPN when I'd worked there was just like, pick a lane. You can't just be front runner on three different teams. Just pick a team. So he gives me crap about bandwagoning all the time. But yeah, man, basketball was for me just, you know, I love that environment. Probably my favorite sport in high school. You know, I loved baseball but basketball was one of those things that I just couldn't wait for to come out of the locker room, and you got the music playing, and I still go to FSU basketball games. I just, you know, I was a very probably below average basketball player, but I loved the atmosphere. We had a good team, and I still love watching college hoops in my hometown. It's a lot of fun. But I think, you know, when we go back, we're talking about kids and sports all the time now, like, the more sports you can play, I think basketball helped me out a ton, just the quickness and having to move your feet, and that really translated to catching a lot. I mean, there's a lot of benefits in playing multiple sports, and basketball was definitely my favorite growing up.
Yeah, I love to hear that, because I feel like there's so many high school students and even younger that are specializing in a sport, and I always felt like the cross-training stuff that you did, whether it was, you know, basketball or football or track or wrestling, I felt like it could help you in other sports that you played.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're spot on. I mean, I learned so much from the other sports I've played. And again, I think also, like, for our bodies, you know, the different types of conditioning is good for you. The one thing that when I was in the front office with the Cubs and being a part of drafts and, you know, watching some amateur players, like, you fall in love with athleticism. You realize the best athletes on the field have the chance to continue to get better and are the ones that are fun to watch. And that's still to this day, when you see some of these star players in our game, just their athletic ability and the things they can do. Some of my ex-teammates, the things they can do on a basketball court, or you see them, you go up and dunk a basketball, these left-handed pitching specialists that I had in Atlanta. One of our guys is just like, I mean, he probably just absolutely jump out of the gym and doing some crazy dunks on off days when you got a chance to hang out. It was just, you know, that stuff, you realize how important that is over a 162-game season, and being able to just, some of things get a little out of whack or go a little crazy, the athletic ability takes over. You know, first person that comes to mind is Javi Baez. Like, you know, it's not always conventional in the way you would teach it, but when his athletic ability just shines through and some of the plays he makes and things he's able to do on the field.
Cubs manager David Ross joining me for a couple more minutes here on The Score. What makes Kyle Hendricks so effective?
Oh, you know, I think it's a combination of just a total package. You've got a guy that can really move the baseball around the strike zone. He's smart. He's able to follow a scouting report as well as read swings and change mid-game.